listening to the How to Health Podcast. Turn up that stereo, plug in those earbuds, or pull up a chair. It's time to master your health journey. Here are your hosts, Dr. Heidi Cook and athletic trainer Tyler Smith. Let's ride.
Howdy ho.
Good morning. How are we?
We are thriving.
Thriving. We were just talking. She is stacking phenomenal sleep after phenomenal sleep and on top of her game right now.
Yes. Peak physical condition over here. No, I'm fine. So I had a friend ask me like if I was totally just done being pregnant. And I was like, not really yet. Like, well, yeah, like I'm tired. Like I still feel pretty good. And I'm just kind of like, you know I only get to do this like a couple of times in my life. And so I'm really just like, you know, soaking up this time and cherishing it and all of that good stuff. But it would be a lot easier to cherish if I could also just sleep.
Yeah. I think you also just kind of dripped that this might happen how many more times? You said a couple times. So is this like
we'll see. Take it one at a time here.
I thought we were already planning 2, 3, and 4 already.
You know, probably not. but like just in the reality of life and how old I am and you know, all of the factors. You know, I know my opportunities to do this are limited.
Sure.
You know? So anyways, like in that sense, like I'm not ready. I'm like so excited to like have him here, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't feel like I've hit that wall that like a lot of ladies hit where they're like, oh my God, get this thing out of me. And maybe, you know, maybe that's a couple weeks out, who knows? But I was also like in saying that to her, I was also thinking to myself, like, I'm also very lucky. And I think the reason that I probably do still feel so good is that like, I can get movement in multiple times a day. Like, if I do have like a really, really crummy night's sleep, like the other day, I, you know, found a 40-minute window in my day where I could literally like walk over to the couch, power down for 40 minutes and then come back and keep working. You know what I mean? Like, sure. I think those are things that not a lot of people, luxuries that not a lot of people get to have during their day, that has helped me like maintain feeling good. And so I think that's also part of it is the structure of my life has allowed me to not just like feel totally like beat into the ground at this point. And it's also my first, like I'm not chasing around like a toddler, you know, while also being pregnant. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into the fact that I'm just like, no, I feel good. But I think, yeah, like up until this point, my biggest complaint is just sleep, honestly.
Well, that's not bad. And like you said, it will, that's the hard part is not being able to bank some sleep because more than likely we're going to be it's only going to get worse. So
yeah, I feel that. But yeah, so been feeling good. I had my growth scan on Monday of this week. He's measuring right on schedule.
Good.
He's measuring in the 42nd percentile. So just a little peanut, which we all could have probably guessed.
Yeah, that would have been my first guess for sure.
And yeah, the one tricky thing is this weekend, I can't remember if it was Saturday night or Sunday night, I felt like him shift like big time in my stomach. I was like, whoa, that was a crazy feeling. And then like where I had normally been feeling like kicks and stuff, we're in like a little bit of a different place. And I was just like, that's interesting. And he's been head down this whole time and just like chilling, ready to go. Literally like the day or 2 days before, I can't remember if it was Saturday night or Sunday night, he flipped breech. And so he's currently breech and I am pissed about it. And yeah, my doctor is not concerned yet. I'm still early enough. He's small enough. I have a good amount of amniotic fluid. She thinks he's going to flip back, but I'm doing like just a crazy amount of, it's so time consuming. That's the biggest thing, is like, it honestly feels good. And it, like, my body feels really good from doing this like three times a day. But I do this like mobility circuit thing. Mm-hmm. And then I walk 3 miles, and then I do the mobility circuit thing, and then Sam helps me with like these like assisted maneuvers, and I'm like standing on my head and doing
all of these, just trying to get him to move, like try to reorientate him.
Yes. And it's, again, like, it's just so time consuming. Also, walking 3 miles, I'm not really walking at the most brisk pace.
Well, I'm sure, but I mean, that is what it is.
I showed Sam, and like, I had been going, so like, the way my week had been split up since I've stopped riding the bike was like 2 days of bar plus prenatal yoga, and then 3 days of walking plus like some mobility or like pelvic floor work. And that had pretty much been like my schedule. But my walks were like right at about 2 miles. And I mean, that would take me like 40 minutes to do. Like, I'm clocking 20 minute miles. 20
and on fire.
I don't even know if you can call it a walk if it's more of a mosey. And so then to like add a whole nother mile, like I'm an hour invested into this walk, you know, and it's just like that on top of everything else that I'm doing. I was telling Sam, I was like, I feel like my week has just revolved around like these little circuits that I do multiple times a day. And yeah, anyways, it was very silly. But yes, we're trying everything. I'm going to go see a acupuncturist next week.
Interesting, because when I did my dry needling course, they were very specific that said, I am not allowed to dry needle on pregnant ladies.
Yes. Well, dry needling and acupuncture are very different.
In some ways, yes.
But there's like specific acupuncture for pregnant women, and like different scopes based on like what you're trying to accomplish. So like, I know women who have gone to get acupuncture to like for, you know, pain relief. I've also heard like about acupuncturists coming to the hospital to help like progress labor. If like a woman is stuck and like not really progressing. And then there's this apparent like specific protocol for breech babies.
Oh, cool.
I encourage them to flip. It is, I'll keep you guys posted because I am so intrigued on how this is going to go. And I basically, but what the craziest thing was like, there's very, like, all of this stuff that I'm doing has like very limited evidence that it,
sure,
the significant impact in the baby flipping. I think what matters more is probably the size of the baby, the size of,
bless you.
Excuse me. Ew, my goodness. Excuse me. The size of, or like the amount of amniotic fluid you had, like how much space the baby has to move, is probably a much bigger factor in it all. But in talking to my doctor, she was basically like, there are two things that have limited evidence support, but at least some. and that's this exercise circuit and the acupuncture. And so she recommended this to me. And then also my doula recommended the same lady to me separately. And so I'm going to go see this lady.
There you go.
Yeah.
Let us know how it works.
I will keep you guys posted on all the things that she has me do. I'm very intrigued. But yeah, it should be very interesting regardless. But other than the fact that he's upside down, I've also just like heard some like crazy things to help the baby flip, like shining a flashlight at the bottom of your belly to try and like entice them towards the light.
Is it like a cat? Like you just do a laser pointer and like, oh.
Yeah, seriously. So there's some funny things out there, but I think for the most part, I'm just trying to chill and not freak myself out because I don't want to like stress myself out about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it'll all work itself out one way or another.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, we are in our 34th week.
3-4.
He is the size of a, I think, are we a butternut squash this week? Yes. The size of a butternut squash.
Butternut squash.
Over 5 pounds, which was also confirmed in the growth scan.
Nice.
This one says 17.8 inches on average. I think he was measuring like 16.4 or something like that. Okay. Which also checks out that he would be short. but the fun one, it was a really fun one this week. Oh, wait. No, this is... Okay. Well... We're recording on a different day. And so this app has me clocked at 35 weeks today.
Okay.
So I don't want to, spoil.
For next week. Revealing.
Yeah, because it's a really good one for week 35.
Okay.
But the other one from last week for week 34 was a Tickle Me Elmo.
Tickle Me Elmo. Man, that takes me back. That was popular back in the day.
Did you have a Tickle Me Elmo?
No, I was too old for Tickle Me Elmo. But I think my sister was probably right in that range. She's about she's 6 years younger than me. And so I just remember the craze of like that Christmas of everyone trying to get a Tickle Me Elmo.
I had a Tickle Me Elmo.
I did not.
Just as creepy as you'd think it is. I still, to this day, like, can remember that laugh.
That's all, yeah. Yeah, it's a little,
haunts my nightmares, honestly. Haunts,
I just, every night, wake up in a cold sweat because of Tickle Me Elmo.
Anyways, how are things in your neck of the woods? You've been traveling, you had a crazy week. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, since we last talked, let's see, we had a track meet in California, which I mean, this is, and I mean, it's only one, but it's like this massive tri meet thing in California where you're actually at three different meets at one time.
Okay.
So lots of competitions for the athletes, which is good, but stacks on like you, I think on average, if I put it out there, myself and my coworker Abigail probably spent 8 o'clock in the morning till midnight every night at a track, like for 3 days straight. So by the time that's done, you're a little fatigued, you're ready for a break.
No kidding.
But luckily for me on Wednesday, we had both a gas leak in the house and an ER visit for my son. So this was just like a week where, like, I literally was sitting there on Wednesday headed to the ER and it got to the point where I was laughing and I was like, this is not real life. This is not like a real thing that should be happening right now. But like, rather than be super frustrated, I kind of just laughed it off and he ended up being okay. And thanks to a misread of an x-ray, we didn't actually need to go to the ER. But everything is a-okay. And so it was just one of those weeks where there was a lot going on, a little chaotic, and you're just ready to like kind of relax and breathe on the weekend, which may or may not happen. The hard part about being out of town all the time is when you're in town, there's a lot of things you got to get done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of things around the house, and we got the camping season coming up. So we picked up the trailer yesterday so we can kind of get that prepped because I'm in town and we got to have some work done on it. So
nice.
It's all good stuff. It's all stuff that needs to get done. It just sometimes timely wise can present a bit of a challenge. So
yeah, that's kind of how we've been feeling too. Like, because we had been gone so much that like when we were finally home and like I wasn't allowed to fly anymore, it was like, okay, it's, you know, it's baby time. Like, let's focus on getting all of these projects done that we want to get done. And I felt like even though we were home and like it was relaxing, it was also just like bang, 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 like all day long. And I feel like finally I'm not feeling as frantic about like getting stuff done because like the big things are done. And like, sure, could his, you know, closet get organized, or like, could I fold his little washcloths or, you know, whatever. Like, sure, there's little projects to be done. But like, for the most part, if he were to come today, like, we'd be good. Like, you know, the major things are set up. And so that makes me feel better and makes me feel like our weekends we can like actually relax. And this is the first weekend where I kind of feel like I'm certain I'm going to find things that need to get done.
Sure.
Because like there's just like yard projects or this or that, that like need to get crossed off the list. But for the most part, like, I don't feel like this weekend is probably the first weekend that we're going into that I'm not like, okay, here's the list of shit that has to get accomplished today. Otherwise I'm going to lose my mind. And I'm very excited about that.
Well, and a part of it too is like getting, you know, spring stuff type done, like getting cleaning done, getting the yard fertilized, getting stuff like trimmed. So like later down the line, we're very much so one of those families that like schedule stuff out. So like it's smaller projects. So it doesn't become like the yard is a disaster and you're spending all day. It's like, okay, let's go fertilize and trim. So you'll knock out like an hour and a half of stuff, but like just kind of schedule it. So that way we can, also like it creates some freedom. Like, yes, it is time consuming now, but then in the summer, everything is ready to go. You can just kind of do maintenance and then enjoy that time where I'm actually off work.
Yeah.
More so when I'm just trying to, you know, if I just lay around all weekend, it's got to get done at some point. And then it takes up time when I could be doing something else.
Yeah. I feel the same. There was like a couple weeks stretch there where I feel like my nesting very much like transitioned to the yard.
Yeah.
And I was like pruning bushes and pruning trees. And I had Sam mow, but then I was like, because he got like the first mow in, because the grass is already like growing big time here. I got our sprinkler system turned on. I got like, you know, all of those things done. And like this weekend, I told him, I was like, I already know that like I need to pull weeds. And then like all of the things that I shouldn't be touching that I normally do, like, you know, I'm the one that normally like weed and feeds the lawn. And like, I was like, that's all on you this weekend. Yeah. But because I'm not, you know, getting myself mixed in with a bunch of fertilizer.
No, sure. And those are things that like, it's good to do early, but also you're like, you know, it doesn't get done this weekend, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's always on your list to try to get those things knocked out.
Yeah. Well, speaking of our yard and our environment and fertilizer and the spring and all the things.
All things.
Yes. This topic has been sitting on our list of, like, Tyler, I've said this before, but like Tyler will send me an email that has like 4 topic ideas each week. And as we knock one off, he adds another one on. And sometimes there's ones that just like live there as we like punt on them week over week. This one has probably been on there for like months.
Sure.
And I think it's for the main reason being it's gonna piss me off.
No, it's gonna make her. Well, and it's one that like I've had both come across my social feed a bunch. I've had athletes ask me, I've had clients ask me about that. And it's one that has so many layers that it's like, it's just something you have to deconstruct and talk to people about, because when you first hear it, so the whole topic today is the earth-friendly diet. And that, like, that's a big buzzword as far as like, what does that mean, being an earth-friendly diet? It's like, and have people like, is that something I need to be concerned about? Because it ties in like how you eat and what you're doing with the environment, with sustainable sources. And I think it conflicts a lot of people, because a lot of people genuinely have concern for the earth and like wanting to take care of the planet that, you know, we're on and make sure we're not ruining it. I mean, some people, maybe that's not a big deal, but I think a lot of us are at least somewhat self-conscious in that fact. But now they're like, okay, so does that mean I'm not eating the right way I should? Am I eating, like, is the way I'm eating affecting the climate, like the earth, and all these different tie things? And like, that's why we just wanted to talk about it, kind of deconstruct it, talk to you about it, because I don't think necessarily I ever demonize. I mean, I don't think diets themselves are great options for most people, but I think if you're doing things with the right intention or the right mind frame and information, you can make the best decision for yourself.
100%. And I think, like, truthfully, I think that's what it boils down to. But there's two things that just, like, because it's come up on my feed a lot lately too, and not in like a, not even in like a, you know, you're wrong if you're not eating this way. It's just like somebody talking about, like, in a very diplomatic way, about like quote unquote earth friendly diets. But I also think there is a lot of misinformation out there as well when it comes to like what it means to be earth friendly and like what an earth friendly diet is. And I think for a lot of folks, like, the immediate pivot is towards veganism or, sure, or vegetarian, right? And that being touted as a sustainable diet because you're cutting out the, how do they refer to it? They're cutting out like the mass farmed meat, essentially.
Right.
But like, when we do that, we then also ignore what it's less about the food itself, right?
Right.
And more about the farming practices themselves.
Sure.
So like, you know, a green bean, right, farmed in a sustainable way, and a cow farmed in a sustainable way, right, are not having the environmental impacts that a, you know, mass produced, you know, pound of beef is versus a mass produced, you know, pound of green beans, right, in terms of environmental impact, how we're, you know, treating and like churning over our soil. And, you know, as those things are being farmed, like, we're still harming that environment for all of maybe the smaller creatures and all of those different things, right? So it's like, you know, where do you draw the line? And what I think bothers me about this kind of buzzword is that it like puts vegetarianism and veganism on this like moral pedestal of like, I'm doing this thing for the environment. And while yes, it maybe could have an environmental impact, it's again less about the like food itself and more about how it's grown. But then the flip side of that as well, that like also pisses me off, for lack of a better term, is like, I feel like that's a very privileged stance to be able to have, right? Like,
I can sit here and I can talk about the beef that we eat is sustainably farmed from a, you know, small local cattle ranch in Nebraska, right? And like, we know the family, and my husband drives and picks up our cow, and like, we live in a big house with three freezers. Like, we can do that. Somebody right. who lives in an apartment in New York doesn't have anywhere to store half of a cow, you know? Right. And like, you know, we can also then talk about food deserts. Like, there are people who just don't have access to vegetables, period. And then, you know, then we're talking about sustainably sourced vegetables and all of these things. And I think it just adds different layers or different barriers for people to that ultimately like muddies the waters and prevents them from just making choices that would ultimately like fuel their body best. And in the grand scheme of difference that we're actually making when making that shift, like, you know, we're talking something minuscule at a grand scale. And so like, I'm not saying that one individual can't make a difference, but if the stress of pursuing that is harmful to your overall health, then we're not actually having a positive impact. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And I think the thing that, a couple of things that kind of irk me or make me not excited about the way this is going is, one, you brought up a good topic, is like, every farm, whether it's both vegetables, fruits, or like animals, is going to be ran and done in a different way. So to collectively say that all cattle ranches are unsustainable, don't have good environmental practices, and are just killing the environment, I think is very much so like uneducated and ignorant about that, because you don't know how each one's, like you said, how each one's ran, like how they're feeding their cattle. Is it grain? Is it grass fed? Is it, you know, free range? All those different things. So there's that aspect to it. Another thing that I don't want to put on my tinfoil hat, but I guess I will, like, you can't patent cattle. And so there is
a fight.
An angle, or a, you know, whatever you want to call it, like a avenue for people to be like, well, I can't patent a cow, but I can patent this specific green bean that is changed and done. So like, there's a monetary attachment to that for some companies, and or an incentive to push things like this, because if I can patent a green bean and sell you on how good it is, then I can make more money. I can't patent a cow. Cows are just cows. Which, I mean, maybe someday we will. I know 3D printed food is this new greatest thing, but
absolutely. Like,
so in that facet, there is a food money incentive thing. The one I really don't like is that it's just like, when they talk about sustainability and how you do it, they're putting like exactly like you said, this ethical attachment to how you're eating, and they're trying to make you feel like if you eat meat, which by the way, is probably one of the most like calorically plus nutritionally dense foods most people eat in their diet. You know what I mean? Like a steak has a lot of calories, has a lot of nutrients. It has a lot of B vitamins. And like, you don't get that from, you know, chickpeas and carrots. So like, you're going to probably find some nutritional deficiencies at some point, unless you supplement, which is usually something, even when you go vegan, protein sources, because most plant-based protein sources are incomplete. You have to pair them pretty well. So in that, you have to be more educated, which I'm not saying you can't do it, but if we call all things equal, most people are not paying attention to that, which is not a good thing. But this whole hierarchy of like, if you're not doing it, then you don't care about the planet. If you're not doing it, then quote unquote, you're one of the bad guys because you're not taking care of the planet, because you're not, you're, you know, you should not be eating XYZ, is just kind of, it creates a barrier and a line for like what I'm doing is better than yours. I'm good, you're bad. And then that doesn't ultimately help a lot of people, because diets for a lot of people are somewhat individual, like what works with you, what is sustained, and what you can do. And if you don't take that into consideration and you draw a line saying this is the only way to do it, we lose so many people in that hard stance that we're taking.
100%. And so, like, I think there's some good and bad articles out there around like earth-friendly diets, because I really do believe that, like, if this is something that you feel passionately about, like, you should be able to go and do and, you know, structure your life in whatever way like feels good to you, right? And if that's something you feel called to do, then by golly, have at it, right? And but like, again, so then we look at the good and the bad, right? So like, I kind of look at the quote unquote bad articles around earth-friendly diets being like, this way of eating is the way. And for a lot of things, like, that's veganism. But like, a Lay's freaking potato chip is vegan, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you really think those potatoes farmed by Lay's are farmed sustainably? Do you, like, those then had to get processed in a factory that's putting off emissions, that then had to get put on a truck to find its way to your grocery store, right? So like, There was an interesting article I was reading about how like one of the worst foods in terms of CO2 emissions is avocados, because really? Of or our environmental impacts. I don't think it was CO2 emissions only that they were taking into account, but it was like, because they are farmed in like hot, arid climates that often see drought, right? But that's the climate in which they like can grow in, because it's warm, are often having a bigger impact on the environment, because they take like, I think it was like a bathtub's worth of water per day for one avocado tree.
Wow.
And then because of their like soft like fruit that's like easy to bruise and all of these things, they have to be air freighted instead of trucked or something like that. And so like, then we're talking about, you know, greater CO2 emissions, because it's an airplane ride to get to wherever, you know, they need to go to be distributed. And you know, so on and so on and so on. And so it's like, okay, you know, when we really start digging into these things and we look at the whole picture outside of just CO2 emissions and the other impacts that we're having, and water usage and environmental damage and blah, 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 like, it's a lot more complex than just one factor. And so then you start looking at, okay, what are the articles or sources that are pointing you in a better direction in terms of guiding you towards something that would actually have an impact on the environment? And everything surrounding that is local meat that is farmed sustainably, right? Like, there's a great account that I follow called the Alder Spring Ranch. I believe they're in Idaho. Yeah, they are in Idaho. And they have like 70 acres, and the way they are farming their cattle is actually regenerating the land in how they move the cattle through the land. And it's actually, with their herd being there, is actually having a positive impact on that land and how they're allowing the cattle to graze and move through, and like that grazing and then them like defecating, right, is basically like spreading the, and like, what's the word they use? I'm totally going to misquote this, because this is not my area of expertise, but like, basically creating more biodiversity, right, in different areas on this like 70 acres, which is improving the landscape. And it's really cool. It's run by 7 daughters, which is also really cool.
Anyways, it's a good follow overall. But then, you know, they sell their grass-fed beef and other stuff as well. And so like, okay, we're now looking at local beef. And if you don't buy that in bulk, that gets very expensive.
Sure.
Right? Like the only way that like that fits into our budget to do is because we buy it in bulk, right?
Yeah.
And we have the space to store it. Then we're looking at local produce, right? And we're talking about in-season produce. There was an article that was talking about like, you know, shopping locally and only buying in season because the farming practices to get produce, to get out of season produce, to grow out of season, either has to be transported a long way from somewhere where it's in season in a separate climate, or the farming practices that it's, you know, taking to make that grow out of season is having an impact on the environment. And so again, like if you feel called to go and go down this rabbit hole and do all of that, that's great. But like, there's also a reality of not every single person has the ability to go to their local farmer's market on a Saturday morning and peruse the aisles and fill their fridge for the week. You know what I mean? Like yeah. In terms of time, access, and money, you know? And so like, that's where I start to get frustrated, is it then prevents a barrier where that individual is like, well, if I can't buy my, you know, local produce, like then what's the point? That kind of all or nothing mentality. And then we get down a rabbit hole of like, you know, putting no effort into creating or putting foods on your plate that like help you feel good, right? And it just like, again, adds another barrier or layer and hierarchy around food that just ultimately irks me. And so it's like, those resources are great if you have the ability to live that way and spend your time and energy and your thought time and energy on all of those different things, great, have at it. But to present that as that's the only way to live correctly or eat correctly, then, you know, that's a totally different discussion.
Well, and I think the hard part for a lot of people is, you can always find a study one way or another to support your positions. That's kind of like the running joke, like in the science committee, is there's usually like a study to that'll support your hypothesis or your theory or your whatever you're going at all the time. Like,
cows come home.
Yeah, exactly. And so some people be like, well, I read this study, and always understand, like, put that with a grain of salt, because there's probably a study that'll show the opposite, unless you have a lot of definitive stuff, which I would argue in the world of science and just everything, like you can almost never say anything's definitive because we just don't have that knowledge base yet. But I mean, I kind of laugh at this sometimes, because you talked about like, one of the biggest things that knock or that talk about cattle is like CO2 emissions. So like, playing a devil's advocate, if someone comes up to me and says, you know, well, you need to eat an earth-friendly diet because you're not supporting the earth. And it's like, okay, that could be true, but you pointed out a lot of great things. Like, are you only buying locally farmed produce? Because if you're not, you know, like, hey, like you're not like as virtuous as you think you are. Are you riding your bicycle to work every day so you don't put any emissions out? And like, you know, are you not using, you know, it's like one of those jokes where a celebrity will go to like a climate, you know what I mean? A earth friendly climate convention. And then they'll be like, oh, I took my private jet to get here. You're like, well, that's not like, it's not really being very earth friendly. So you getting up here and do it is virtual signaling more than anything else. The other problem is like anything that I think it's such a hard thing, because we have to have some sort of cognitive understanding of how we eat, but the more that we put restrictions on that, the harder it is for people to sustain. And that's just another thing that we're doing, is like, okay, well, if I want to eat earth friendly, I can't eat this, but I can eat this, I can't eat this, and I can't eat that. And like, well, that is the premise of most diets, is the reason they work is because you have some sort of restriction. Like anything, like history and like will tell us that probably the failure rate is still 80 to 85% because it requires restriction and discipline. And at some point, if it doesn't fit in your life, those things just run out. And like, that's the other problem, is like you're attaching ethical values to it, but you're also setting people up to fail in most cases. It might work out for some people. And if it does, like, awesome. I'm all the more to you. If like you found a way to make this work, if you kind of molded your life around this, like, I have no problem with that, but it's probably not going to work for 90% of the other people. So I appreciate people who have found a way to do this, but to quote it, or, you know, like there's a US News article that basically says, if you care about the environment, this is how you should eat. That's just irresponsible. Like, you're like, there's no definitive thing or no definitive research that says this is the only way to eat responsibly. And you're just kind of putting your values, your whatever side of the line you're on, and attaching it, and then trying to influence other people to do the same because you feel it's a more ethically superior platform to work on.
100%. And like, again, I'm also not shitting on some of those larger farming practices. Like, while yes, like, it's, you know, 2024, we need to like find ways to move the needle forward and, you know, not kill our planet. But also, like, a lot of those larger scale farming practices help provide these foods at a accessible and keep costs low. Sure. Right. And so like we didn't even touch on like organic versus inorganic. And so like, you know, we want to talk about environmentally friendly, you know, we're going to start talking about the pesticides and all of those different things that are having an impact on our environment as well, and what that's doing. And but like at the same time, I'm not somebody who's going to sit here and say, you know, eat all organic if our ultimate goal is to just get fruit on our plate.
Yeah, know? Absolutely. Yeah.
And so like, while we can put this like hierarchy of, you know, here's what's, you know, these environmentally friendly farming practices, but like also there is some value to being able to give our countries, you know, our population food at a reasonable, you know, price that they can put food on the table. Because like, what a privilege, or just what a blessing to even be able to be worried about where our food is coming from and the impact that we're having by consuming certain foods, when there's lots of people out in the world that are truly just concerned about getting food on the table, period.
Sure.
And so like, you can sit here and demonize these like very commercialized, materialized, you know, farming practices or whatever. But at some point, like, there is just some value to being able to give access to food for our population.
Yeah. And I think the other hard part is it's another piece of information that we put out there that confuses, I think, more than helps. And then it kind of, like we've talked a lot of, it just paralyzes people and they just decide to do nothing instead of make a better decision. Well, it's like, well, I mean, this is telling me if I can't do this and this, I'm not helping in the environment or myself at all. So I'm just not going to do it because I'm paralyzed with information or don't feel that making this change is such a monumental change that there's no way I can succeed in it. So they do nothing instead. And we're not ultimately, like you said, moving the needle much at all.
100%. And so I think, well, we can head to the sauna to wrap it up.
Let's head to the sauna.
Welcome, everyone. It's time to head to the sauna. Let's dive in.
Let's go. So,
I think, like, in summary, or just like takeaways that I want individuals to have is A, to not take every article you read at face value, right? Because oftentimes there's more layers to the story, and any article can cherry pick any piece of evidence to help support their point of view. And so making sure that you are allowing space for the gray, sure, right? But more than that as well, like, if you have the ability to be worried about these things, right? Like, if that's within your mental capacity, right? Like, I think making some decisions that you feel good about is great. Like, again, I don't shop all organic produce. I don't shop, like, it's a fun, maybe like twice a year thing that I go to the farmer's market, you know,
not very frequently.
My produce. There's really cool companies out there like Imperfect Produce. And there was another one that I just saw recently that, like, you know, ships you produce to help prevent, food waste in the world for produce that is rejected by, you know, regular supermarkets or whatever. And it's because, you know, the potato is shaped a little bit funny or whatever. But, like, there's cool things out there to help you make a difference. And I think making an informed decision that balances how you put food on your table and feed your body in a way that makes you feel good, right? Like, I was just watching this whole series of this gal who used to be vegan, and she's no longer vegan, and the, like, positive impact that that had on her overall health. And she is getting ripped to shreds on the internet from the vegan community, basically saying that she's a sellout and all of these things. And it's like, at what point are we able to just make decisions for ourselves that make ourselves and our families feel good? And if, you know, buying your beef locally makes you feel good, then great. And that's a choice that you get to make. But I think more than anything, not stressing yourself out about every little decision, because stress has a greater impact on your overall health than if the strawberry that you eat is organic or not.
Yeah. And I think, and I echo everything you say, I think the biggest thing that popped in my mind during this is, well, two things. One, like you said, always be cognizant of what you're reading and what is being presented to you, because there's usually some sort of bias involved with it. And that's not bad, but we have to be cognizant of the bias, because we don't want to just be influenced by one side. And sometimes the best idea is, you know, if you're thinking about veganism, read an article about that and then go read an article about carnivore, so you understand a better side of the argument and can make a better decision. The other thing for me is just attaching, and this is probably going to make some people mad, and this happens a lot in, like, the vegan community, is like attaching ethical practices to food is okay if it works for you, but I'm not I don't like it as a practice in general, because it creates a lot of animosity and anger. So understand that everyone's going to have a little bit different approach. Everyone's an individual, and how their diet is going to affect them is going to be a specific way that doesn't translate to everyone else. So just take it with a grain of salt. If you do it and you like it, perfectly great to be like, yeah, I tried this and it works great for me. But yeah, to preach it as the end all be all is a dangerous practice. And I think that's something we just have to get out of the mindset of.
100%. I agree and echo that completely. Are you on trivia this week?
I think I am.
Okay.
I couldn't remember. I know
I'm glad you are, because I was sitting here just twiddling my thumbs, not even thinking that I could possibly be responsible for trivia this
weekend. I mean, I have some, like, so. My computer is not liking me today, but that's okay. We have trivia today, and the trivia today is all about Earth.
Oh, wow. How timely.
How timely. Look at how that worked out. Yes. Earth is the what planet from the sun in our solar system?
Oh, no. That's like common knowledge that I should know.
We are the sixth planet from the sun.
Close. We're the third.
That's not close.
I'm just trying to help.
Oh, that's funny. Sorry, guys. There are few. My nephew would just be so disappointed in me. He loves space, and he would be very disappointed. But Sam makes fun of me for like he's like for being a very smart individual. You have some gaps in your knowledge. World geography. That's a large gap. And like space in our solar system, another large gap. So can't wait for that to be outed right now.
Life on Earth is basically the existence of life on Earth is because of this specific. Hang on. Let me see how I put this. Substances, ability. To change in different forms, like from gas to liquid to solid. The only reason we have life on Earth is because of this specific substances.
Yeah.
There you go. See, easy. And for everyone that's wondering, it's because of when ice, like when water turns to ice, it floats. If it sank, then like life on Earth would not be able to be sustained because it would ultimately freeze itself. So.
Oh. Interessante.
This is just interesting. It's like, did you know Earth is the only place in the solar system where water can be present in all three states at one time?
Oh, fun fact.
Fun fact. There you go. God, I apologize.
Your computer?
Yeah, it's like insanely slow today. This will just be fun. We are traveling around the sun at an average velocity of how many kilometers per hour?
Oh, so this was a dumb, it was like a dumb question. Because you like take the circumference of the Earth and, you know, one rotation is roughly 24 hours. And then you do some math. Miles per hour. And then you can convert miles per hour to kilometers per hour. But I know none of the figures and I'm bad at math. So. It's like 1,000 miles per hour or something like that. So I don't know how many kilometers
per hour. Yeah, you're exactly right. It is 1,000 miles per hour. It is 107,182 kilometers per hour. But you hit it right on the on the money.
I remember that because it blew my mind that we're just spinning at 1,000 miles per hour.
Earth is slightly larger than what other planet? This will be one of two left in the solar system.
Earth is slightly larger than two planets?
Like what planet? There's one other one that we're slightly larger than in our solar system.
Jupiter.
Close. It's Venus. I don't know if that's close at all. My son would know more because he's in his solar system thing in Earth science right now, and I don't know.
Jupiter is where boys get stupider.
So that's mature. All I remember. That's so mature. Last one is, what percentage of the Earth's ocean is still unexplored?
Whoa. Probably so much. Are we talking depth or are we talking like surface area?
Just the whole thing, surface area. Like how much of it have we not explored?
82%.
95% of the Earth's ocean is still unexplored. So that's
vast.
That's not great. But I mean, I guess that's probably due to the pressure when you get down there. So we haven't quite figured that one out yet.
Yeah. And just puts into perspective how much
you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly.
And we're talking about aliens, but we don't even know what kind of life is floating
around. We don't know how big Megalodon is down there and just swimming around at the bottom of the ocean.
It's probably a whole colony of mermaids that we know nothing about.
Yeah, that's where Atlantis is. They live down there.
They're just chilling. Just waiting for us to discover them.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a while. I'm sorry, guys.
Anyways. All right. Well, hopefully that was an interesting discussion. Also know that we are carrying our own biases into this conversation as well. And if nothing tips you off about bias, when I start a sentence with, you know what pisses me off? I'm likely carrying some bias.
It's likely not a completely unbiased opinion.
No. So, keep that in mind. And hopefully knowing that and understanding that, I hope all of our podcast episodes and all of our discussions, you get to do what you want to do with your life. But I hope these discussions help you get your wheels turning to think about these things and how they are incorporated into your life and help you make a more well-rounded decision that feels good to you.
Exactly. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.